Weasley's Wildlings, Part 1. Benji awoke to the familiar sound of Arthur shouting, "Drill!" in the distance, followed by a relentless thud, thud, thud as he pounded on doors and sat up rubbing his eyes in the darkness. He immediately noticed the absence of Rawbone's ear-shattering snores and glanced quickly at the enormous cot that took up half their tent. When he realized it was empty, a delighted smile crossed his face, and for a brief, glorious moment, he entertained the possibility that the Cyclops had deserted during the night. A loud series of grunts dashed his hopes as the grotesquely large figure of Rawbone, seated on the ground in a behemoth pile of bulging muscle and massive limbs, outlined itself within the darkness. In his hands, he held a tiny satin pink ballet slipper, and as Benji watched in disbelief, he twisted, turned, pulled, and yanked at the straps of the shoe in a desperate attempt to wedge it onto his monstrous foot.
"Damn you to hell!" he snarled at the shoe and pulled harder. "Damn you to the everlasting pit of fire and brimstone!"
The Cyclops gripped the sides of the slipper with a final vicious tug, and his shoe promptly split apart at the seams. He burst into tears and threw the shredded slipper across the tent to Benji.
"I just wanted to wear something pretty!" he howled.
"Drill!"
Arthur yelled and banged on the door. Since Benji was the sort of person whose internal mood naturally gravitated towards cheerful, his spirits rose steadily throughout the morning. And by the time he exited their makeshift showers, he felt positively elated. The rolling hills of Gloucestershire unfolded around him in a panorama of pastoral bliss, and the September air was sharp and clean with the scent of fermenting apples and wood smoke. The campsite below was dotted with trees of vibrant gold, amber yellow, apple red, and deep purple, their rustling leaves swaying and winking in the morning light. He hurried down the hillside towards a perfectly enormous, bubbling black cauldron that floated just above the ground, where a variety of men and creatures sat on an assortment of haphazardly placed logs, speaking amongst themselves as they levitated sausages onto plates. Benji took a seat beside Lupin and glanced up at a tawny-breasted owl that circled lazily above Sirius before dropping a newspaper towards his bent head, and Sirius snatched the paper out of the air without even looking up.
"Time for the news, boys!" he called out exultantly and leapt onto a nearby log.
"Keeping company with Sirius," Lupin commented impassively to Benji, "is like traveling with a group of circus performers who never sleep."
"Listen up!" Sirius yelled happily and waved his prophet enthusiastically in the air. "Lieutenant Weasley, you want to hear this, mate?"
Arthur, who was seated on his prized muggle lawn chair, some 30 feet from the rest of the group, stood up grudgingly and made his way towards the cauldron with his arms folded across his chest, and Sirius cleared his throat loudly and assumed a pose.
"Headline! Death Eater attack on Hogsmeade!"
he shouted importantly and looked pleased with himself when the entire group fell silent.
"At 5 o'clock this morning, when the good citizens of Hogsmeade slept innocently in their beds, 10 despicably evil Death Eaters..." What other kind of Death Eaters are there? Fucktards. 10 despicably evil Death Eaters...
"Will you fucking shut up?" He glared ferociously at the newest member of their company, a young vampire huddled piteously some 20 feet behind the rest. One of the spoils of Fudge's newly instituted draft, the reluctant recruit was wrapped in a tattered turquoise cape, his face hidden behind lank black hair, and an ancient orange handkerchief into which he blubbered without ceasing.
"Put a lid on it, Grinniddle!"
Arthur bellowed, and the blubbering turned loudly into howling. Sirius shot the man another venomous look and began speaking loudly enough to waken the dead.
"Here's the rest. The aforementioned despicable Death Eaters appeared in formation on the High Street. Their leader, described by eyewitnesses as scary and wearing a mask, stepped boldly forward to confront a group of merchants readying their shops for the day. As the 6 shop owners strode defiantly towards the looming visages of the terrifying men..." Who writes this fucking shit? Gilderoy sucked my dick, Lockhart. "Anyway, the looming visages of these terrifying men of doom..." Bloody hell, that's pure poetry, isn't it, Mooney? "Their leader immediately demanded they surrender the town."
He stared at the paper with a look of genuine outrage.
"Surrender the fucking town? Who the bloody hell do they think they are?" assholes. All right, Weasley, all right. Just after these words were spoken, the proprietor of Og's Head Inn, a grizzled old man known only as Aberforth, threw a tin pail from which he had been feeding his goats directly onto the leader's head. The pail slipped down neatly over the dastardly devil's mask, where it dripped milk upon his neck, much to the delight of the gathering crowd.
Fenwick!
Rawbone growled and banged his oversized fork against his wooden plate.
Fenwick! Have a brekkie, I want you to play Mr. Tippletoe Goes to Market with me!
Are you off your head? Benji scowled. Trying to listen to this. Say my name properly, he added crossly. It's Fenwick. One word.
The Cyclops kicked angrily at the dirt. Benji's fear of him had diminished dramatically with each passing month, until it now seemed in danger of disappearing altogether.
Mr. Tippletoe Goes to Market isn't a game, Lupin yawned. It's just another public display of your utter lack of sanity.
Fenwick! Mooney!
Sirius barked out.
Ma, please continue.
Sorry, Sirius, Benji sighed. Go on, then.
Quite all right, mate,
Sirius responded graciously.
A dreadful skirmish ensued as citizens in their nightclothes, awakened by the brouhaha in the streets, held themselves behind lampposts and rubbish bins. According to eyewitness Ethel Raggynut, an elderly witch with keen eyes, the mangy old goatkeeper took down three assailants with a crossbow, hatchet, and his fists, whilst another was toppled to the ground by a herd of enraged goats. This is excellent, he added approvingly.
I hate you, Fenwick,
Rawbone bellowed and heaved his monstrous arms in the air.
Tonight, I'm going to kill you.
Just be getting on with it then,
Benji replied in an uninterested voice. Sooner be dead than live with a glaiket like yourself. Sorry, he called out to Sirius, who was glaring in his direction.
Thank you,
Sirius hissed back in an extremely offended tone.
Thank you very much. Stop that fucking shit, assholes! I'm reading it!
The three interchangeable goblin brothers, all surnamed Gornuk, had begun growling and spitting at one another.
Quit looking at me, Golem! Quit looking at me, Gorble! Can't be bothered to look at me, can you?
Screamed Gerzel, and they all fell upon one another with angry squeals.
Stop that nonsense, or I'll cut off your ears!
Arthur snapped, and all three assumed a sudden silence.
Appreciate that, Lieutenant Weasley. Now, where were we? Right, three dastardly devils down by Aberforth and one by the goats. Okay. The remaining six villains, in an hideous display of cowardly and unchivalrous behaviour, then turned to pursue the owner of the three broomsticks, a young woman of a mere 26 years.
Sirius shook his head sadly.
Bad decision, asswipes. The brave lass then stupefied two of the men. Yeah, no doubt, when they got a look at a fucking bodacious... All right, sorry, Mooney. The brave lass then stupefied two of the men before blasting a third into bits and bobbins with what onlookers described as a frighteningly well-done confringio spell.
A prissy-looking man in spectacles, suspenders, and a beaded bow tie cast a suspicious glance at the man beside him, who was scribbling on a thick roll of creamy parchment with a bejeweled quill.
Do not read it to us, Horatio,
the fussy little man, whose name was Primrose, intoned sternly.
I simply cannot bear it.
Horatio Spleen, a tall man with enormous dark eyes, a beak-like nose, and polished brown curls as smooth as lacquered wood, let out a mournful sigh.
A poet is never appreciated in his own time, he murmured in a doleful voice, despite the fact that I am obviously the literal reincarnation of Lord Byron. It has been whispered throughout London.
A particularly anguished wail from the young man in the back drowned out Primrose's retort, and Sirius continued on with the story.
The praiseworthy proprietress, Miss Rose Myrna McUpsig, originally of County Nairnshire, then proclaimed in a loud voice that every last one of you cowardly beasts will be regretting this, which I imagine most of them had already done, you know, anyway, and goats will be flying before I'm surrendering to anybody.
Lupin and Benji grinned at this, Arthur chuckled loudly, and several members of the company cheered enthusiastically, all of which stirred Sirius into an even more melodramatic recitation.
No sooner had the lovely lion-hearted lass spoken these words, when a dramatic bam! bang! Heralded the arrival of none other than Albus Twinkly Fox Lemon Drop Dumbledore, headmaster of the nearby Hogwarts School of Blah Fuck Me Blah, whereupon the remaining Death Eaters spared him the necessity of killing him by simply dropping dead at his feet.
Sirius finished with great satisfaction.
Death Eaters in Hogsmeade! Arthur shouted anxiously and began pacing around the cauldron in circles. That's practically the front gates of the school. My two eldest boys are there right now. Why, Bill is a sixth year. He'd probably run out and join the fight.
Not to worry, Weasley, Sirius informed him sardonically and looked back down at the paper.
This will put your mind at ease, mate.
The entirely worthless Cumstain and Lord High Retard Cornelius Fuck Me I'm a Pussy Fudge issued a proclamation of reassurance to concerned parents throughout the country, emphasizing that immediate action would be taken to protect every child at Hogwarts.
Sirius occasionally added a word or two to the text, but as it was generally obvious which words were his, complaints were seldom voiced. Any mention of Fudge delighted him, since Arthur became mysteriously deaf when innumerable vulgar insults were tacked on to the minister's surname.
"Fudge do something? I'd like to know what he'll do," Arthur said vehemently. "I guarantee you he's holed up in his toilet right now. Whenever the man's nervous, he gets the shits. Everyone in the ministry knows it."
"Oh, why me? Why me, I ask you? God of heaven, why me?"
shrieked the sobbing man behind them, but not even Benji or Lupin, the only sympathetic persons in the company, turned around. 48 hours of Grinlittle's bawling and howling had effectively vanished every bit of their initial compassion. An enormous black-shrouded hag emerged with a great deal of groaning from a pile of leaves and lumbered over to squat beside Lupin. Perched atop her shoulder was a black cockatoo that began busily pecking into the masses of bugs squirming within her matted, tangled hair. Half the men dropped their plates onto the ground.
"Blast and bugger!" a heavy-set bald man named Silas Scunthorpe shouted. "I'm off my appetite now, I am!"
Everyone looked impressed by this, since Scunthorpe had once devoured 3 entire chickens, one not quite dead, while sitting amidst 12 corpses after a particularly long battle. Sirius hopped off the log and strolled over towards Benji and Lupin, motioning towards Scunthorpe with a motion of his head.
"I finally realized who he reminds me of," he said enthusiastically. "That bloody baldy from Eccleston Square Gardens, don't you think?"
"Oh, yeah," Benji agreed fervently. "Even sounds like him."
"Who?"
Lupin said in a bewildered voice. Sirius grinned at Benji and dropped to his knees with an anguished expression.
"You'd understand, Mooney, if you understood about Parvo!"
he shouted out, and he and Benji fell into paroxysms of laughter.
"Me best mate!" Benji choked out. "Me china plate!"
"Me and him!" Sirius gasped.
"Foo fickin' Finn!"
Lupin just shrugged as if to indicate they were both mad, and speared a sausage while the cockatoo slowly rotated its head and fixed him with a malevolent purple eye.
"Quit looking at me,"
he hissed at the bird.
"Princess,"
the hag mumbled soothingly and stroked the cockatoo with a long, yellowed finger.
"Princess, I'm a wrecking bitch."
Most of what the hag, whose name was Maladora Grimm, had to say was incomprehensible, which did not pose a problem since no one wanted to know anyway. She leaned purposefully to her left, allowing an enormous glop of thick, mucousy drool and a steady stream of green snot to land on Lupin's sleeve.
"Holy shit!"
he yelled and leapt to his feet, flinging his plate like a frisbee across the tops of the tents.
"I'm a fucking werewolf, and you're making me sick!"
Grinlittle shuddered violently and shrank down into his cape.
"I've never known such violent creatures!" he screamed. "Why have they sent me to this pack of terrifying and vicious beasts? I cannot possibly endure it. Cyclopses and goblins and werewolves and thieves!"
he trilled out melodramatically. Lupin gave him a baffled look and sat back down on the log.
"You do realize you're a vampire, don't you?"
he asked the man politely.
"Well," Grinlittle responded haughtily, "yes, but I've never met a werewolf before, and I find you to be most frightening," he shivered.
"What have I done to you?"
Lupin said with a pained expression.
"Well, it's not what you have done. It's what you are," the man huffed in response. "A creature who speaks lightly about these gruesome battles, this business of creating fire. And I heard you talking of dark vampires yesterday," he added triumphantly. "Apparently, they're your friends."
They aren't my friends, Lupin replied in a surprised voice. I just killed some of them working for the Ministry.
The statement was met with a high-pitched scream as Grinlittle staggered to a standing position.
And now you're boasting of killing vampires! I cannot endure it! I've never in my worst nightmares dreamt of such a loathsome and terrible beast!
He screamed wildly and threw himself dramatically back to the ground.
And you do stalk back and forth so, he added sulkily.
Lupin sprang up and stormed back to his tent, banging the creaky wooden door behind him.
Oh, my poor ears! The vampire moaned and clutched at his head. It is simply dreadful the noise that beast makes!
Benji tossed his plate aside and started towards him, but his path was blocked by Sirius, who walked nonchalantly in front of him and sat on the ground beside the fellow with a face full of sympathy and compassion.
What's your name, mate?
He asked in a friendly fashion.
Your given name,
he clarified kindly. Grinlittle's mouth dropped open with a gasp of surprise.
Antonin, he sang out rapturously. My friends call me Tony. Well, when I had friends, that is to say,
he added pathetically and choked back a sob. Sirius shook his head in a pitying fashion and draped his arm across the man's thin shoulders.
Tony, is it? You can call me Sirius, mate,
he pronounced affably.
Thank you,
Antonin choked out, his eyes misting over with tears.
Oh, terribly good of you. I do appreciate your kindness. And I must say you are extremely handsome, he added breathlessly. I do not believe I've ever met any man so stunning. Why, you are...
Yeah, we all know that, Grinlittle,
Sirius replied impatiently.
Here's the thing. Mooney likes to think he frightens people. It bothers him, see? Now, as for me, well... I like it.
He paused and smiled widely, revealing his perfect white teeth, and Tony gulped audibly.
Here's something else you want to know,
Sirius announced glibly as he stretched out his hand, admiring a ruby pinky ring.
I like making lists. This is one you want to memorize. It's called People I'd Like to Kill.
I didn't mean...
Antonin babbled frantically.
One, Sirius began in a pious tone. Death Eaters. They are just not nice people,
he explained loftily.
Two, anyone who tries to kill me. It's only fair. Three, people that fuck with my friends. Four, anyone named Antonin Motherfucking Grinlittle.
He smiled in a diabolical manner, which made Benji think of Lucifer just before his fall from heaven, and pulled a knife from his boot, which he began sharpening on a log. Grinlittle emitted a strangled squeak and threw his cloak over his entire body.
Enough of that! Arthur scowled as he strode into the center of the group, waving a parchment in an irritable fashion. Listen up. Important proclamation from the Minister of Magic to be read at once to all defense companies, he recited sourly. Therefore, I'm reading it.
At once, he added in an extremely sarcastic tone.
Is it about Hogsmeade? Benji asked hopefully.
Of course not, Fenwick! Arthur growled. That would be actual importance. Now, Cornelius J. Fudge, Minister of Magic, has declared that the defense companies of Wizarding Britain shall no longer be titled as Company A, B, and so forth.
Oh, but that was so clever,
Sirius chimed in.
In the interest of promoting comradeship among us, there is no such word as comradeship.
Ratio Spleen declared pompously.
Who writes this rubbish?
Quiet! Arthur screamed. To promote the whatever, each company shall choose a name consisting of two words, first bearing the name of the ministry official, or the surname of the company's lieutenant, and the second, which shall form an acronym with the first, forming a descriptor of themselves. Examples include...
A sickened expression crossed his face.
Fudge's Finest... Inglebrook's Incorruptibles, Urquhart's Unconquerables, Crouch's Crushes, and well, you get the point,
he snarled and flung the proclamation into the fire.
I like being Company M,
Sirius groused.
I figure M stands for me.
Yeah, well, we need to get on thinking up a name,
Benji told him in a low voice,
or Weasley will come up with one about himself.
You've got a point there, Fenwick.
Arthur scowled in the direction of the shaking cloak on the ground.
Get your head out of that cloak, he shouted. Put on a big girl blouse and grow a pair or I'll kill you myself. There's one thing I can't stand, it's a sniveling coward.
Grinlittle sniffed haughtily and poked his tear-stained face out from beneath his hood.
I shall not be intimidated, he announced loudly, but was careful not to look in Sirius's direction. You all have not the slightest idea of what I have suffered in the past Well, he broke off quickly. Let us just say you've no idea how I've suffered, he finished petulantly.
Yeah? How old are you?
A tough, bandy-legged Irishman spat out threateningly. This was Bilbis Bagshot, petty thief, swindler, con man, and mercenary, whom Sirius had befriended quickly, since he was exactly like the people he had hung about with during his childhood.
That is an extremely rude question,
Grinlittle declared and looked piously up at the sky.
I tell you I will not answer it.
When were you born? Arthur demanded and pointed his wand threateningly in his direction.
Out with it!
Well, Anton replied sulkily.
1473, if you must know. You're over 500 years old,
Arthur responded interestedly, his expression changing completely.
Why, I imagine London has changed quite a bit since your day. Was Diagon Alley still there?
Of course, his new recruit responded dismissively.
And how do I know if it's changed or not? I've not been back since I was bitten in 1509. 1509,
he repeated miserably and struggled to his feet again, sashaying back and forth with his hands on his hips.
I was 36 years of age at the time,
he called out loudly to the assembled group.
And one of the most celebrated men in England and the continent. I performed dramatic recitations in every palace throughout Europe. I was expert in the worlds of fashion and art. Everyone wanted to know me.
Did you know anyone famous? Horatio Spleen burst out excitedly, and Primrose curled up his lips in a revolted fashion.
Certainly I did, Grinlittle responded proudly as he continued his strutting. I took my lessons with Paracelsus, the great alchemist and astrologer of Renaissance magic. I created sculptures under the tutelage of Michelangelo. I was taught to paint by Raphael. There were no restrictions from interaction with muggles in my day, he screamed accusingly.
Is this also for real?
Grunted a dwarf with a scarlet beard that hung to his knees.
I had lovers in Paris, in Venice, in Greece, Antonin howled tragically. You peasants cannot possibly imagine the life that I lived, the fine wines that we drank, the choice meats upon which we feasted, how we were serenaded by court musicians whilst reclining upon couches of velvet broke hard,
he shrilled hysterically and beat upon his breast.
Ours was a halcyon existence. You shall never know, never the celestial bliss of our lives. There is no possible way to describe it, as we lived each golden day cavorting upon Elysian fields of unspeakable bliss.
Lupin strolled out of his tent and glanced from Grinlittle to the rest of the group, all of whom were utterly speechless by this time.
How merrily we rowed our boats, he howled and flung his arms wide. How gilded our gondolas! How lovely the flickering lantern lights! How gracefully we sailed, gliding like gorgeous swans down the Seine, the Thames, the Grand Canal!
Lupin whipped out a parchment and began scribbling furiously.
I've got to write this shit down for my dad,
he whispered to Benji.
This will be a fucking excellent story.
Do not speak! Do not speak!
Antonin wailed and dropped to his knees, his hands clasped together over his chest.
I cannot bear to hear the sound of a human voice. How could I possibly bear it when the voices of those I loved best are gone, gone forever!
He sobbed violently.
Oh, my beautiful lovers! My treasured friends! My beloved sisters! My precious mother! Dead! All of them dead! Buried! Forever gone!
He emitted a final impressively high-pitched and heart-rending scream and collapsed motionless to the ground. A protracted silence followed, broken only by the sound of Lupin's scratching quill.
We all got problems, Grinlittle,
Arthur said irritably.
Beautiful lovers, treasured friends. What was after that?
Lupin said.
Something about his sisters and mum, Benji put in helpfully. Dead and buried.
Forever gone,
Sirius hissed darkly.
Don't forget, forever gone.
For someone who had just displayed the most theatrical show of anguish he'd ever witnessed, Benji thought, Antonin seemed to recover rather quickly. He stood up, dusting off his puffy green velvet knee-length breeches and shaking dirt from his mustard-yellow linen shirt, and made a horrible face at the group surrounding him.
"I see that you have returned," he sulked as he glared at Lupin. "Aren't you meant to be living in the woods, you savage beast?"
Arthur swung around and punched Grinlittle in the mouth, following this up with a spinning sidekick to his groin, and the assembled company cheered wildly.
"How dare you!"
Arthur shouted at Grinlittle, who was writhing in pain on the ground.
"How dare you speak to him in that manner? Well, I'll kill you myself and tell Fudge I did it! Stand up!"
he hissed, and Antonin staggered to his feet, clutching his groin and groaning piteously.
"Now, I'd like to know what in hell you've been doing since 1500 and whatever. How could you possibly not make a single trip to London in 500 years?"
he thundered, as if this were a personal affront.
"He's got a thing for muggle London," Sirius commented with satisfaction. "Told me he's lived his own life in the West Country and could never afford holidays to the capital."
"I will tell you what I've been doing," Antonin cried and put his hands back over his face. "I have been hiding. After I was bitten, I was sent back to England in disgrace, trussed up in a cargo hold and tossed ashore in Sussex to die. Vampire hunting was quite legal in those days," he added bitterly.
This tragic tale only seemed to aggravate Arthur more.
"And you couldn't get yourself to London from Sussex?" he bellowed. "What the bloody hell is wrong with you? Not up to the walk, Nancy boy? London is leagues away from Sussex," Grinlittle screamed angrily. "The journey is treacherous and nearly impassable. The roadways of Sussex are overgrown with brambles and thorns and rife with bandits. It's a terrible, dreadful, and dangerous journey,"
he finished darkly.
"It really is," Lupin told Arthur matter-of-factly, "especially when the trains run late on that Brighton line. You can't hardly find a place to sit."
"Yes, mock on, hateful creature," Grinlittle cried out spitefully. "I had no choice but to morph into my bat form and fly away, farther than I ever would have thought possible. Day after day, further and further north I flew, through rain and hail and apocalyptic storms, my poor wings flapping feebly with exhaustion. Yet I was terrified to stop. I flew to the furthest corners of the earth before I simply dropped from the sky like a stone and lay on the frozen tundra. If I had not been immortal, I would have died 1,000 deaths. I returned to my human form and, covered in filth and more wretched than any being has ever been before, crawled inch by painful inch into a nearby barn."
He paused as a smug expression crossed his face.
"There, I morphed again into my bat form and hibernated in the hayloft," he proclaimed proudly. "I remained there until 2 months ago, when some muggles chopped it down to build a cinema." "You hid in a barn for 500 years?" Benji said disbelievingly. "Which was a very cozy barn."
"Hang on," Sirius said impatiently. "You said you were in the farthest corner of the earth. Who builds a fucking cinema in the farthest corner of the earth? Where the fuck were you?"
"Well," Grinlittle responded petulantly and averted his eyes, "Bedfordshire, if you must know."
The entire camp exploded into laughter, and the three boys fell on their knees, overcome with mirth.
"Bedfordshire!"
Benji gasped out and wiped tears from his eyes.
80 miles, Lupin choked out. "It's 80 fucking miles from the coast to Bedfordshire.
Why didn't you just ride a broom, mate?"
Sirius called out gleefully.
"Could have got there in an hour."
Antonin's eyes widened in shock.
"Riding a broom is an abomination against God," he screamed and stomped his foot. "Man was not meant to fly like a winged creature in the sky. It is also illegal," he informed Sirius haughtily. "Do you think I'll not report you to the ministry?"
"There's a temporary ban on brooms solely due to the war," Arthur said contemptuously. "The Death Eaters were blasting people out of the sky. It's been perfectly legal to ride a broom since 1825. I'd say you're wanting some history of magic lessons," he smirked nastily. "Perhaps I'll ask Albus if he can spend the school holidays with Binns. 500 years of history of magic," he said with relish.
"I say we just leave him behind, sir,"
croaked out the long-limbed Dillwiggle, a spindly, olive-colored man with hooded eyes that gave him a permanently melancholy expression.
"And tell all that shite to the Death Eaters!"
He shifted position on the grass, his knees splayed out on both sides.
"I believe you are part frog, Dilbert."
Primrose frowned over his spectacles.
"I do not care what the geneticists say. Obviously, it is possible."
"It'd be a story for the prophet now, wouldn't it?"
Bagshot remarked slyly and shot Dillwiggle an interested glance.
"Might be a bit of money it. Me mum was a frog, and I don't give a ribbit."
Arthur turned and headed back towards his tent, still chuckling, and the rest of the company straggled off in groups of twos and threes to plan their afternoon. Benji expected Sirius to suggest a walk to Cheltenham, since he was always keen to suss out the local village, but he was eyeing Lupin somewhat warily instead.
"You look like you feel better, Mooney," he said kindly.
"I do," Lupin replied in a satisfied voice.
"I really do. This is an excellent day,"
he enthused as he looked about the countryside.
"What were you doing in the tent, mate?"
Sirius put in casually.
"None of your business, Padfoot. Let's go into town. But where are we again?"
"Gloucestershire, near Cheltenham. Thought I saw Meow flying off."
"That's because you did,"
Lupin replied cheerfully.
"Want to go into town, Fenwick?"
"To oh, did you send this owl, Mooney?"
"To whom?"
"Quit trying to change the subject. Who the fuck did you send it to?"
"He's like a dog with a bone, isn't he?"
Lupin remarked to Benji.
"Yeah," Benji agreed. "You could nag a person to death, Sirius."
"I will pretend I did not hear that, Fenwick,"
Sirius said haughtily.
"And for your information, Mooney is up to something, and I happen to know it."
"I don't know why you're being so paranoid, Padfoot."
Anton and Grinlittle, meanwhile, had inched up behind them, his face avid with interest.
"I do hope you all kill each other off," he said excitedly.
"Who'd you send that owl to, Mooney?"
Sirius repeated impatiently.
"I'm going to keep asking you until you tell me."
Lupin said nothing.
"Did you write Elizabeth?"
"No, I did not,"
Lupin said definitively.
"I did not write Elizabeth."
"Then who the fuck did you write, Mooney?"
"Tell him,"
Benji said desperately.
"He'll be on it all day."
"All right,"
Lupin shrugged as he sipped his coffee.
"I wrote to Voldemort." "That is not even the slightest bit funny,"
Sirius said reprovingly.
"It is,"
Benji chuckled.
"I think it's..." "It wasn't meant to be funny,"
Lupin interjected calmly.
"You asked me to whom I wrote, and that is to whom I wrote. Him. You know him."
"Isn't that old Voldy thingy, that evil creature we all meant to be fighting?"
Antonin asked meekly.
"You wrote him?"
Benji yelled in disbelief.
"You actually wrote him?"
"What exactly did you say, Nissau, Mooney?"
Sirius said very slowly, as if he were talking a deranged man down from a roof.
"Well,"
Lupin mused as he stirred his coffee with his finger,
"you know I've been rather depressed all summer,"
he said apologetically, which Benji thought was the world's greatest understatement.
"It just wouldn't go away, you know. It was horrible. But then, that vampire made me angry,"
he continued thoughtfully.
"So I started thinking about all the people I was angry with, and why. Victor, and Elizabeth, my older sister, and Greyback, and Slughorn, and Malfoy, and..."
"Okay, we get it,"
Sirius said impatiently.
"You were angry."
"Right,"
Lupin replied pensively.
"But then, I got angry with myself for being angry, you know?"
Sirius sighed.
"It's not easy being Mooney,"
he informed Benji.
"And then, I realized whose fault everything actually was,"
Lupin pronounced in a positively delighted voice.
"Riddle! Everything is Riddle's fault. Every single thing. If we hadn't happened to be having this war, see, I surely would have been writing to Elizabeth myself. Actually, I would have been seeing her myself, which means none of this would have happened,"
he finished wrathfully.
"None of what?"
Antonin piped up eagerly.
"What happened with this Elizabeth? Oh, do tell!"
"You know I hate feeling angry, Sirius,"
Lupin continued pleadingly.
"I knew I'd feel better if I just told him what was on my mind, you know? That is why I wrote him."
"You knew you'd feel better if you wrote to Voldemort,"
Sirius said ominously.
"Of course you did, Mooney, because no one can console you like the Dark Lord."
"Well, that isn't why I wrote him,"
Lupin said in an exasperated voice.
"I wanted to tell him what I thought of him."
Grinlittle clapped his hands excitedly.
"Whatever did you say?"
he asked breathlessly. What did you write to Lord That? Lord Who's It?
Yeah. I think we'd all like to know that, asshole,
Sirius hissed.
What the fuck did you say in your fucking owl you sent to fucking Voldemort? I told him he was a great coward,
Lupin replied in a satisfied voice,
and a cock-sucking, spoiled little bitch.
Sirius closed his eyes.
I'm guessing you signed your name to this. Yes,
Lupin pronounced proudly.
I did. I even put in the John bit.
Your given name's John? Antonin giggled. Sirius stood up, paced around in a circle, and said nothing for 5 minutes. Something Benji imagined was some sort of a record.
Let's get this straight, Mooney, he said finally. You were feeling angry. You were feeling angry, so you sent a bloody owl to motherfucking Voldemort, which basically said, please kill me at your earliest opportunity because I am such a stupid fuck, he screamed. I knew you wouldn't understand,
Lupin groused. Shit, Benji moaned. This is some shit, Lupin.
Yeah, that was some bloody, brilliant shit, Sirius barked out. He's gonna blast you into 1,000 pieces, you stupid, sodding cunt.
Lupin just shrugged.
I don't care what you think, he announced stubbornly. I'm glad I did it.
Why's he doing this? Benji said wildly to Sirius. What's wrong with him?
He's a fucking nutcase, Fenwick. He is a barking, raving, mad, mental lunatic. This shit with Elizabeth has unraveled his brain. It's none of your business, Padfoot,
Lupin scowled.
This is between me and him.
The fuck it is, mate, Sirius shouted. If you want to kill yourself over some muggle minx from Mayfair, go jump off a fucking chalky white cliff, Sussex boy. Some of us were planning on living a few more years.
Yeah, Benji added solemnly. We don't mind dying or nothing. Not as long as you're feeling better.
Lupin gave them both a strange look.
It's got nothing to do with you two.
The fuck he does, shitface! Sirius bellowed. Do you think we'll just stand around and let him have at it? If he goes after you, he goes after us and you know it. And then he fucking kills us all. I had decades of self-indulgence and idleness planned here, asshole. And I am too pretty to die.
That is true, Antonin sighed theatrically. Although I must say your disposition is most disagreeable.
I didn't sign your name to that owl, Lupin told Sirius solemnly. Just stay out of it.
Sirius got up and paced out of view for a moment, and when he returned, he was shaking his head and smiling.
You actually wrote to Voldemort, he said in a bemused fashion. Fuck me.
He gave Lupin a positively affectionate look.
You know what, Mooney? Good for you. Yeah, you wrote a motherfucking Voldemort,
he reiterated in an impressed voice.
Who else has got the nerve to do that? Let's see what he does, mate,
he enthused.
I say we take that fucker on. You're both off your heads,
Benji yelled with a panicked expression. We can't be taking on Voldemort. You couldn't even kill that Moody. Both Sirius and Lupin appeared offended by this.
There's no need to bring that up, Fenwick, Sirius huffed. That was 9 months ago. We've had a lot of practice since then. And you happened along when we back turned,
Lupin added triumphantly.
Well, no worries then, Benji shouted back. Because Voldemort would never do anything like that, being the honorable sort and all. Do you think he'll really come?
Lupin asked Sirius avidly.
Oh yeah,
Sirius enthused, a glint of maniacal delight dancing in his eyes.
Not by himself, though. You know how he is. He'll bring 50 people with him,
he added happily. Benji sat down with a resigned expression on his face.
It's all right, he said gloomily. I always knew you two were going to get me killed eventually.
By nightfall, there had been no return owl, nor any sort of appearance from Voldemort, and Sirius seemed rather aggravated.
He's a piss-poor correspondent, mate, he told Lupin irritably. Can't even get around to answering an owl, can he? Well, that's just bad manners.
The three boys were sprawled on blankets in front of the Marauder tent with a bottle of fire whiskey, enjoying the fresh breeze and the starry indigo sky.
He's a busy man, Benji intoned sardonically. He's got places to go, you know. Things to see. People to kill.
That is no excuse, Fenwick, Sirius sulked. I wonder if he's got a secretary. Maybe he's not even read it yet.
Who would be Voldemort's secretary?
Benji said impatiently.
Bellatrix, Lupin commented knowingly. She'd be his anything.
What are you all talking about? Arthur demanded as he stepped up behind them. You've written to someone important, haven't you? Who is it?
Fudge,
Sirius replied promptly, and Arthur narrowed his eyes. Why in the bloody hell would you write him?
"To tell him what an excellent job we think you're doing, sir," Benji put in earnestly. "Bollocks!" Arthur shouted rudely, and Antonin Grinlittle, who had been skulking in a nearby bush, burst forth and nearly fell to the ground with excitement.
"They have written to the Lord Who's It," he announced with glee. "That Lord Voldy thingy!"
Sirius rolled his eyes.
"Course we have, Grinlittle. We write him once a week, Lieutenant Weasley. Try keep in touch."
"Enough of this nonsense," Arthur said irritably. "Now, I've had an owl from the minister."
"I tell you they wrote him!" Antonin screamed. "They did! They did!"
"It seems he's been inundated with demands from the public about the Hogsmeade incident," Arthur continued sourly, ignoring Grinlittle entirely, "which he somehow seems to blame on me."
"Fudges like that,"
Lupin commented. "Yes, yes, we all know you're the expert on the ministry now," Arthur growled. "Climbed right into Shacklebolt's pocket, haven't you? Don't think I'm impressed. Anyway, Fudge wants me to send my four best fighters to guard the town."
"That is excellent," Sirius pronounced emphatically. "Hogsmeade! Think of all the girls,"
Benji moaned ecstatically.
"Yeah, we'll go to Hogsmeade,"
Lupin added cheerfully.
"What makes you three so certain I've chosen you?"
Arthur scowled.
"Because you're here talking to us," Sirius responded promptly. "Which you do not do, unless there's a reason, because you do not like us. So, who's going to be our fourth? Bagshot?"
"Anybody but Rawbone," Benji said pleadingly. "Anyone at all?"
A devious smile crept across Arthur's face.
"I'll tell you who," he replied and paused dramatically. "Grinlittle." "He's not your best fighter," Sirius yelled back. "He couldn't fight his way out of a fucking paper sack."
"He couldn't even pick up a sword," Lupin said disgustedly. "Remember, he said it was too heavy."
"I'm having a holiday," Arthur announced happily. "A lengthy holiday from the three of you, and I won't have it ruined by that wretched vampire. Now, stop packing," he bellowed and flung four scarlet paper tickets in their direction. "He wants you there tomorrow afternoon. He's even shelled out train passes from Cheltenham. I want you on the earliest train. And don't leave without the vampire."